Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today, so sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we have two great guests here to introduce. So it's one, Anna Dugat-Kinar, environmental art meets activism. She transformed pristine landscapes and ocean plastic into striking colors that celebrate beauty while calling for planetary responsibility. And then Malka Nobigrod, from Harvard to G20, law to leadership. Malka Nobigrod builds bridges, inspires change, and transforms conflict into opportunity to discover her story. But first, we would like to kick off with a song selected by Anna.
My heart again. All of this time I thought we were pretending. Nothing looks the same when your eyes are open. Now you're playing these games to keep my heartbeat spinning. Yeah. Show me love, you show me love, you show me everything my heart is capable of. You reshape me like butterfly origami. To my heart, this time I feel the blues have departed. Nothing can keep me away from this feeling. I know I am simply falling for you. I'm taking time to envision where your heart is and justify why you're gone for the moment. I tumble sometimes, looking for sunshine, and you know this is right when you look into my eyes. You show me love, you show me love, you show me everything my heart is capable of. And now I can't break away from this fire that we started. You have broken into my heart. This time I feel have departed. Nothing can keep me away from this feeling. I know I am simply falling through. There my heart goes again in your arms. I'm falling deeper and there's nothing to break me away from this.
I'm very happy to welcome Anna here in the show, Anna Dugat-Kinar, an artist, and we just heard her song, or the song selected by her. So Anna Dugat-Kinar, welcome here in the show.
Thank you for having me, Annabelle.
I would like to welcome you and introduce you with a few words. You are an environmental artist, photographer, author, and human rights advocate whose work stands at the intersection of beauty and responsibility. Sponsored by Canon since 2017, you are internationally recognized for your signature collage that merge untouched landscapes with reclaimed ocean plastic, creating images that are at once cinematic, provocative, and deeply ethical. As an ambassador for the Lives Amplified Foundation and a member of international environmental committees affiliated with the United Nations, Honor uses art as a global language for change. Her storytelling extends beyond the visual realm into literature and publishing, always guided by one central question: how can beauty awaken accountability? Today, we explore her journey, her rituals, her convictions, and how creativity can become a force for planetary healing. So, Anna, nothing comes just with a snap, right? So I'm really curious to hear what role did nature, but also beauty, but also art played in your childhood.
As a child, I really enjoyed being out in nature, and back then I feel like it was more clean than now. But I was always one of these outdoor children who were staying out late until my mom called me back, and I think it's the same until today. I like to be in outdoors.
That's great, because I think that many people in the world have lost the connection to nature. And talking about sustainability by having lost the connection to nature to us, no, let's say it like this, is of course something which is not possible. We don't need to be surprised facing that there is such a gap between sustainability and the people's minds or the people's behavior, right?
Right.
As a young person, what did you believe your future might look like?
And to be honest, as a Ukrainian-born woman, I thought I would marry some rich guy.
Absolutely fair. And when did you first realize that art would become your voice rather than merely your profession?
I knew at the moment when I gave up on making art for aesthetics and wanted to raise awareness on plastic pollution.
That's great. And was there a special story you have in mind which you would like to share with us?
So I've been living in Bali since 10 years, and I've been watching thousands of tourists traveling to the island, treating it like a trash bin. You know, they litter everywhere because they think they're not home. The worst is how the government accepts it and treats it by itself, because they accept so much trash from foreign countries, which is not their own trash. So that's how the pollution problem in Bali started, or in all third world countries started. And because they're so corrupt, there's even a law that they stopped accepting trash, but they claiming it now as paper waste or something else, and still accepting it. So that's how it becomes more and more dirty. You see all the pristine pictures, pristine beaches that you see on pictures, you don't see them unfortunately anymore. And when I've been working with Canon for a very long time, 7 years, and I've been trying to show beauty worldwide and say, look at this empty remote beach, please don't trash it. But the message was not very clear, because you see the beach, but it doesn't say please do not trash, right? So on one of my missions, when I was recycling plastic and doing these beach cleanups, I decided to send them to a factory that they transform it into miniature bottles, and then I decided to put the trash back in my art. So it was like okay, you don't understand what this empty beach is standing for. Here's the beach with the trash. And then it became some kind of an activism. It found me, I think. I was not going actively for it.
Wow, that's interesting. And I mean, how is it? How must it feel for you to being there so close to where you're facing this rubbish all the time?
Actually, I'm sad because, first of all, I think that the country and the government has to implement the rules, not
I have to come as a foreigner and tell you how you treat your country. This is not my job, right? On the one hand. On the other hand, since I see that there's a little gap between third world countries and first world countries, how they treat plastic trash, because they just burn it. So for this whole idea of burning plastic trash has to change before any rules, any laws will be implemented. Then, of course, as tourists, every tourist behaves the same worldwide, right? You are not home, so you throw it somewhere. I would say Indonesians living in Indonesia, they have such a beautiful traditions. They take their shoes off before they enter a house or a home. And I would like to treat that we treat our planet as a home. It's not where you are for 5 days, of course, but it's still the whole planet is our home. And I find it upsetting how this planet is treated. So for me, watching it and being powerless, because I don't want to walk up to every single human and say, what did you just do? I'm not a teacher, right? But I want to reflect it in my art.
Is it not also something which we have to face, that we are all one? That, for example, when we put poison into water at some place, I mean, it is one ocean, and it comes maybe it comes to another site, and it's affecting also the pollution at a completely other place. I think we've just lost the connection, not only to us, but also that we are just one. That it's a puzzle. That everybody is a piece of the whole, right?
Exactly. It's especially that we are just one. I think it was never, not many people see it like that. That's why so many religious wars are happening, right? Because it's like us against them. Who's us? Who's them? What are we fighting about? It's also in many countries, men against women, or unfortunately too many countries. So this that we are one is an ideal idea that you and I share, I fear. And especially about the ocean, what I learned at the ocean conference in Nice is that people don't understand the ocean. They think this is something far away that I don't care about, because I'm not swimming, I live in a city, what do I care what this ocean is doing? I'm just gonna dump my waste there, dump oil there, dump all the toxins there. It's not gonna come back, as if it doesn't reflect in our food already so much. I mean, we're literally eating plastic.
Absolutely.
And toxins.
That is really insane. Do you think that your artistic language has to adapt to this, has to change, to speak out more louder or more aggressive or more storytelling to reach the people's heart as well as the mind?
Well, in my artistic language, I'd like to slap the viewer that he feels shocks and sees something, because what I'm showing is not big news already. So we all know what is happening, right? We know about the pollution, we know about the toxins, we know everything, and still somehow people are not feeling affected by it. So I don't want to be polite, because everybody we've been polite enough. I feel like we have to be more radical with this. Am I too far away from your question? I'm sorry.
That's absolutely okay. No, no, thank you. I was just thinking also about a question. I'm not sure, I haven't asked you beforehand if you are fine with this question, but you're from Ukraine, and you just also said about men and women, the fights which we face all over the world too, about rights and same rights. Sometimes if I look into the Ukraine-Russian war, I mean, I'm really shocked, because these are sometimes neighbors, these are sometimes friends coming from same roots or similar roots. What does your artist soul thinks about it, and what does your activist soul thinks about it? Is there any idea how you want to react on that or act on this, or is it more that you stand a bit away because in a kind of I can't face all problems of the world?
I'm selective on the world problems. That is exactly the truth. And me, that's true. I was born in Ukraine, but I grew up in Germany. I feel a little bit more distance to the situation, but also I feel like what we said before, we are one. There is not us Ukrainians against them Russians or vice versa. It was funny, you know, I have a Russian friend, and when we go around together, we say, so usually I say I'm more German because I have a German pass. I grew up in Germany. I feel more, I can more relate to Germany, and I have a little bit of a German, more of a German mentality. But when I'm hanging out with my Russian friend, we go around, we speak Russian. So when people ask us, where are you from? I'm saying I'm Ukrainian and she's Russian. And some guy asked us, are you not talking about the war and the conflict? And we were like, no, I don't know. Why does it have to be standing between us? It didn't even cross my mind, but also not her mind, to speak about it. And that's, and he was so shocked. But I think that's the problem with people nowadays, that they built this invisible barrier between them and other people. And exactly this same barrier they built between pollution, between toxins and how it will reach you. It's the same barrier that you would call a cow beef on your plate, but it's still a cow that you're eating, right? So we need to protect, I guess, people to protect themselves, build a little barrier in their mind to, I don't know, to create their own bubble, to protect themselves from whatever, but also like to attack, it's their fault, and to point fingers. So as an artist, I would say I don't have to educate anybody. People already know. I feel like they must feel it more. Not, it's what I'm trying to do is not a rational educating, like, here's a book, this is right, this is wrong, we do not do this, we do that, because they should already know. I'm talking to mature people who are educated, who are living, yes, with their own problems, but it's to build a better future. But I feel like all what I'm doing is trying to make them feel what would happen if it would be, if that would happen to them. So I am curating, I would like to, I'm working on a new exhibition that is called Injustice, and that shows different world problems, like world hunger, toxins, human rights, female rights especially, and it's an immersive exhibition. So what I want the viewer to see is, not just to see, but to experience how it would be if it would be you that lives in Gaza and has nothing to eat, if it would be you that cannot abort because of right, if it, and also to show that problems like world hunger could be solved, but certain parties don't want them to solve. Why? Like, people don't wonder, why do we still have even this kind of problems that could be all eliminated? Why are women still suppressed? I mean, it's 2026, we could eliminate all these things, right? And such small-minded things as religion, they put in front, but they put, people put not just that in front, they put several borders and boundaries why they cannot do something, right? Because, my God, I don't want to be stoned at your show, but because some God told them, or because, you know what I mean? Or because the government told them, or why are you burning plastic? Because the government, because you were born like this, you grew up like this, right? So you do all day the same. And I say, those kind of people, fuck's sake, are you still making fire with wooden sticks? Like, mm-hmm. Can we not evolve? Or can we not all do, contribute a little bit to that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a question, and we have a 2 minutes breaks now where everybody can think also about this and his and her positioning. And we see each other back in approximately 2 minutes after the small break. Stay tuned.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Anna, we just talked before the break about your next exhibition. We talked also about the behavior of the people, that they don't, that they often don't see, that they should look at the things at a, from a wider perspective, and often just see themselves free of responsibility, free of the idea of being one, and free of the idea of what comes next, or am I maybe a piece of that? What is responsible to make the prepare for a world worth living in, right? So, Anna, you shared with us that you are sometimes also a bit sad when if you see things which you don't like, if you see things and procedures and behaviors where you see that people are not working on a future worth living in, but more on their own comfort without a wider perspective. So selfish, but even not selfish, because even if they would be selfish, they would care about their about the planet, right? So we talked also about what can be done, and what do you think should be? What is your goal? What is your goal, and how do you want to reach it? Let's do it from that point, because you're facing so much difficulties. You are facing so much challenges. You're out at the ocean, see the poison. You see the waste. You see all of that. What is your goal, and how do you want to reach it?
You know, I believe in the butterfly effect, that when you change a tiny piece, you can it could impact the whole world. I'm trying to change one human by a time. So when if I could influence a single human to live a better life. So let me restart quickly, because I think that people who would like to change the world, not to make it a better place, let's say, they think it's such a big grand gesture that they don't know where to start. So they leave it because it sounds already exhausting, right? Oh, I'm going to change the world. No, I'm not. Who am I to do that? I say, why can we not just start small? You get a coffee, you leave the plastic lid, you leave the plastic straw, you recycle your trash. I don't know, you put your cigarette in the trash bin. It looks small, right? What if everybody would do that? What if everybody would try to reduce their trash? What if we would stop buying at Shein? And what if we spend 10 euros more, but we keep those clothes a little bit longer, not just for the season? What if I could influence one person who could do something so tiny, insignificant, which doesn't affect their lifestyle at all? You can live the same life. You just try to be leave the planet a little bit of a cleaner place without changing your life. And you start being a little bit more considerable how it would end up, right? And then this person might affect another person and then another person. And then we would create maybe a giant effect, and that would put pressure on the companies to say, I'm not investing in water bottles with plastic. Easy, no? I mean, now there's a lot of alternatives. You can order your water bottles home so they could be out of glass. You don't even need to carry them. So I do understand if you're a 90-year-old grandma, you don't want to carry those plastic bottles at home. I'm fully with you. You can order them online and they will bring it up on your floor and nothing changed. But if everybody would change a little tiny habit, we could put so much pressure on the big companies that they would be forced to reduce the plastic. And then, of course, the government, what my goal would be as a part of the UN-affiliated organization is to change the plastic laws, to taxate them more, that there could be heavy penalties, that it could be all banned because it's not all up to us. It's about the concerns, right? The big industry. And then, of course, with my Injustice exhibition, which is going to be a worldwide exhibition, I want to touch as many human lives as possible. And I want to create, I know how it sounds, but I want to create pain, because I think just pain brings us more forward to how we can change. Of course, many people people change different things, but they change the fastest through pain, because you don't want to feel this pain ever again, like through the during the pandemic. Also, a part of it is in my museum's exhibition. You know what you don't want anymore. Probably, if there would be a second lockdown, I don't know what you would do. I would run. I would spend the time as I spent it in Bali. It was magical. I didn't have any lockdowns. I would do exactly the same. But if I would live in a first world country, I would run towards a country where that doesn't implement a lockdown, right? So once you burn, you feel that pain, you feel you cannot see your loved ones, you would immediately change that, right? And that's with everything. I want them to feel that much pain for themselves, for our children, and for the future, that they have to do something, that they go home and they say, man, I have to stop going on with this habit that I've been dragging along for 60 years. This is how I am now. No, I can do something else. That's my mom used to say. So she's like, this is how I am. I say, Mom, no, you can, you know, skip the plastic bottle. Just order the glass one. And I think little by little, if we all work on it, I just want to inspire other people to do the same, that they feel like you can do something, not somebody else is gonna do it for you. No, you can do it.
What are your daily rituals, the small little butterfly steps where you are doing sustainable things, maybe also as a kind of tips for others?
I say always do not harm and take no shit. So before I start to do something actively, I try to reduce the stuff that I would do. Currently in Vietnam, it's actually very difficult because they have this takeaway culture where you order for three people, you order a kilo. If you order takeaway food, you create a kilo of plastic just by ordering one time. So I'm trying not to do it. So before I actively become an activist, I try to remove all these things. And I try to reduce as much plastic as possible. I have a toddler. It's not as possible as I wish. I don't litter. I am trying to wear organic clothes, bio clothes, fair trade. And also, I have to say, I have clothes since 15 years. I don't live in this throwaway culture, so I'm investing more. I know we're gonna live together. This is life. Me, you, the jacket. We are one. So I'm trying to be as sustainable as possible, and I'm also trying to be a role model. I know how it sounds, but you cannot preach what you don't live, right? So, and it's small. Like I said, I'm living daily small habits that make my life actually really hard sometimes. Even if I get a takeaway coffee without the lid and I know what's going to happen, a person is going to run into me and this coffee is going to end up on me. That happened endlessly. I cannot even count the times that happened, and I'm still doing it, you know? What can I do? I should not walk with my coffee. I can just sit and sip it. But it's the small things that I'm trying to do daily that become a habit that you don't think about it. I'm not going out of my way, you know, when I say I go to a restaurant and I see, I don't know, they only have plastic cutlery, let's say, but I already ordered the food and it arrives with the plastic cutlery. Am I going to go out and change the restaurant? No, I'm not. I'm going to stay, but the next time I'm not going to go there. So it's the small things that we try to avoid, I think, count more than the big things that you're gonna aim to do, but you don't do them. So that's what I would recommend to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when you think about customer, and you just had a customer as a key, because the customer can buy or not buy. The customer can say, hey, I won't buy this anymore because of this and that. So please come with me, support my boycott, for example, right? Your customers which are buying your art, what type of people are these?
They're visionaries, I think. They want to support my vision and they will support their own view where the future might go, that we are all moving towards a global crisis and they can see it. So my art is like a protest sign, like a shield. It's not just something nice to look on, and reminds us all what might happen. For example, my series We Are All Barbie, where I create art with Barbies, because we consume that amount, huge amount of plastic, where you all become plastic. My customers, they understand what I'm trying to tell, and it's a part of a movement. They won't become the movement. They don't come and say, that looks nice, because everybody can nice. I'm not even trying to look nice. Of course, I like aesthetics, but it doesn't mean that you have to go for aesthetics all the time. It stands for something, and my customers, they understand the vision behind it, and they, like I said, they have their own, but they also want to try to leave the world a better place. I know how idyllic that sounds, but I mean, before you start a war for religion, I would try just to leave it as it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yes. I mean, you have to concentrate on your work, and of course, with this a lot of crises, changes, challenges you're facing, what you described from the beaches. I mean, this could really bring you down. What are your habits to not let this bring you down? What are your hacks to stay healthy and resilient?
You know, I learned something from a neuropsychologist, and she said, do not leave the energy line. That means in the energy that you want to stay, in the state, happiness, excited, motivated, inspired, whatever, she said, do not leave it. There are moments that will upset you, that are dragging you out of this energy line, but you have to stay in it. So if the boyfriend breaks up with you, yes, this is a sad moment. Do you have to stay sad for the rest of your life? No, you don't have to. You can feel the pain and process it, and then you go back to the energy that you want to feel. Also, I do a lot of sports, like 20 different kind of sports. I do sports daily, sometimes twice a day. I'm learning kitesurfing currently. That's why I'm in Vietnam. That's giving me a huge buzz, and it's also a lot of endorphins. So I'm generally a happy person. I'm meditating about it. So this is my happiness is my natural state. I know where I am in this life. I know where I'm going, and it doesn't change the people. I'm not letting other people bring me down, other energies, other world effects. And also, to be honest, I don't watch the news. I think it's very healthy.
You have a small kid, Anna. And so the question about next generation is a question maybe you sometimes ask yourself. What future do you hope to have for your to prepare or to be able to prepare really seriously, and not just a dream, which is really something which will stay as a dream, but what is possible, and what would you wish for your kid, for your next generation? What should the world look like?
I hope she's gonna be a generous, kind-hearted human who can understand right from wrong, and that she's also gonna try to leave the world a better place. So I can just lead by example, and not how laws are right or wrong, but your personal moral compass. And I also hope that in future through AI somehow this will all solve itself, maybe also a bit, let's say, naive of me, but I cannot do all by myself, right? So I hope that there will be plastic solutions, there will be implementations against all the toxins, and I hope my child is going to grow up in a cleaner world and also in a safer world. But if not, I hope that she's going to stay on the right side of the moral compass and how to live her own beautiful life. And that she's happy, of course.
We have sometimes voices which say we need another education. Parents can't do it because they are struggling on their own. But what kind of education could we or do we need, which schools can address, which schools can offer? What is realistic? What kind of education could this be, Anna?
I think the same education that we have right now, but we could implement a few things more. Like in Thailand, I've read they have, I don't know if it's daily or weekly, but frequent rituals of meditation, which is helping a lot to understand yourself more. So before, I guess, it teaches children to find the problem by themselves before they point fingers on others, right? And then I think that, for example, if you would learn in school more mindfulness, more breath work, and how to activate all your senses to actually be fair and considerable, the world would already be a better place. I learned it so late, to be honest. I wish my kid, and since I'm also living in Southeast Asia, I hope that my child will implement all these things. She already has even 5 minutes of meditation in kindergartens. They do yoga in kindergarten. So all these things that I think Asian countries are doing really well, they practice. And I know what they really learn. They learn how to be kind. So they see also how to treat animals, all these things that what I would say maybe Western world see a little bit of a time waste or something. I think these things should be more implemented. So even, I know how cruel it sounds, but I think if my daughter would see how a cow gets slaughtered, that she gets her beef, I think that would be enough to stop it. And I wouldn't mind. I don't want to do it to my child personally, but I would not mind if that she understands that cow and beef is still cow on your plate, that she understands, and then she can decide with a young age, do I even want that? And it's not just about cows. I mean, you know, to each their own, but like the injustice, how the cow is treated before it dies, let's say, okay? And all the small things, like what consequences, what action and consequences it has to be a reckless, normal, like not a reckless, but a normal human in our civilization. You are already reckless. You are ordering something from a discounter. This is already reckless. It goes all in this direction. And people, before they think that about themselves, that they're a good person, I'm always asking, what good things are you doing? So, yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Anna. It was a pleasure talking to you, getting some insights of your work, and hopefully seeing you soon. All my best for your work, and that hopefully as much as possible people get shocked by the pictures you show and turn on changing their life, and if it's just a small little steps. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks a lot, my dear. See you soon.
So we have a small break, approximately 2 minutes, and then I'm happy to continue with Malka Novigrod. So please stay tuned. We see each other and back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome, Malka. Welcome, Malka Novigrod, here in the show.
Hello, Annabelle, and hello to all your audience. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm happy to introduce you with a few words, Malka. You are a woman whose career spans law, government, and international diplomacy. From her law degree at Universidad Iberoamericana to her Master of Laws at Harvard, she has navigated some of the most influential corridors of power, serving Mexico's Ministry of Finance, Foreign Affairs, Labor, and even the Supreme Court. She's a founder, strategist, a global advisor, and an award-winning thought leader. Her work in crisis management, conflict resolution, and government-private sector relations has shaped policies and empowered organizations across continents. From the G20 and Power Alliance meetings in India to being named one of 50 senior women leaders by Banco Santander and the LSE, she continues to break barriers and redefine leadership. Today, she joins us to share her journey, the lessons learned from navigating complex systems, and her vision for transforming challenges into opportunities. Welcome to a true changemaker. Welcome, Malka.
Thank you, Annabelle.
Malka, we have today the security conference here in Munich, and I'm sitting next to it. And we are facing, some security problems, some security issues around the world, but we are figuring or we are facing much, much more. If we go back where you come from and what made you the person you are, can you describe your early inspirations that led you to go and step into these areas which are currently really the ones where the crisis really is visible, most visible, and where you need most clever, most intelligent leaders at the place?
I think that I come from a very interesting background, a very multifaceted and very multicultural background, and that has helped me to understand conflicts from different perspectives and in my education as well. Since a very young age, I was exposed to many languages and to many forms of thought. And I think that that has given me the perspective to at least try to understand different viewpoints. And I think that in crisis management, that is of the essence, because nobody has the full truth. It's like in those Japanese gardens that are the stones with all the waves, that there is always one stone that is buried. And that means that the truth that you think you know, there is always one element missing. And I think that in these conflicts and in the world today is very polarized. And I think that people subscribe to their bubble mentality and fail to understand that there is always another truth and another reality. And I think that in this conference in particular and in the changing world, I think that having the humbleness to understand that our truth is not the truth
and the full throat. I think that that has always inspired me, and that has always been of an essence and a factor that has been in my family. And that has always pushed me to also to see justice and what is justice from a very broad perspective, and to understand that it can be situational and that it can be changed.
Thank you for your insights. Are you fine also with sharing maybe one special situation where which you can really remember as if it was yesterday, which made you understanding what differences you can make by stepping into the topic of law?
I think that I come from a very from a country where there are many injustices and where there are many differences. And working with the communities, you see that you don't need to make huge contributions. Just a simple, even in the Inter-American Development Bank, for instance, that was one of the most marking feelings that I had. When I was working in Colombia, for instance, for the Inter-American Development Bank, we worked in a community that was built in garbage, in a garbage dump. And that community, my input was to create a sense of empowerment. And the bank was very good at doing that. They built a field to play football. And then we came in to create an initiative for social justice. People in the community had to travel many days by foot to get to a court. So we created an instance for mediation and community mediation. So we trained the people that were the elders and people that were recognized in the community. And that started a trickle-down effect to empower the community. And now the community is amazing because they have a field, they have this initiative, and they understood that they can mend their own problems, and they don't have to go necessarily, if they're not very complex situations, to tribunals that are days within walking distance. And that is a simple little thing that just created a sense of empowerment in the community and of transformation. And I think that, like Anna was saying in the previous segment, you just need one little thing to change. I agree with her that we have this sense that you need to be, in order to be a change factor, your vision is that you have to do great things. No, you just have to do one little thing with an input within even your most immediate family and friends to be able to create a wave of change. And I agree with her in that sense.
We talked before the radio show a few minutes beforehand about the current situation, Marco, in the world. We talked also about a bit about the crises. We talked about this concern of security. We talked also about where the world stands currently. And I remember that a few years ago, everybody was talking about sustainability. Everybody was just curious how we get the CSRD and 17 sustainability goals into reality. Now it seems that we have completely different problems. What is your view on that? What is your view on that? And what are your ideas, what the next steps should be?
I think that the problems are the same. I think that their goals are still made to be achievable. The problem is that they have politicized themselves, and that has, they have been misused by many groups, probably to advance agendas that are not necessarily in the best interest of everybody, but very much in particular interest. And I think that it's a problem in that sense that those goals have been politicized and have been led, and people have been led to believe that we don't have to pursue them, or that I think that we still have to pursue many of the goals. Simply, I think that we have to take out the politics of certain goals, and ideally those groups have to be, I don't know if pushed aside, but much more, those agendas have to be taken by other groups and embraced by other groups. And yes, you were saying about the problem of security. I think that it's a great problem in all the world. And I think that there are groups that have been advancing very pernicious agendas that have displaced agendas that are worthy pursuing.
Absolutely. I'm completely with you. What are your hacks, Malachar, over the day, rituals over the day, by keeping yourself in a good mood, in an organized mood, and not getting too much emotionally involved, that this energy can take you down?
Hey, Annabelle, that has been a question that I have been struggling for a lot of time, because since I have to read news all the time, I sometimes get vested and I sometimes start my day with this worrisome feeling of doom. So I try to compensate by making sport. I have my rituals of waking up, trying not to take the phone immediately, going to the gym, dedicating some time for me, spending time with the people I love, try to seeing the day in a more positive outlook, and limiting the news that I consume every day, because if not, I really, my health start taking a toll. And I try to assign days and try to assign hours that I consume news. And that has helped a little bit to balance my, and to put it in a much more balanced view, my day and my life and what is going on in the world.
Thank you. And is it also that you have rituals about a kind of longevity rituals, or are these already the longevity rituals by not watching too much negative news?
I think that is part of it. And I try to eat healthy. I think that what you put in your body is very important. I try to eat a lot of vegetables and healthy food. But occasionally, I have to say that I indulge in certain Mexican food and fried things. So, but it's part of life. But I think that balance is part of life. And I think that you have to also take distance in what you do. And negative opinions. I try to be, you know, I'm not perfect. That's for sure. And I have sometimes an explosive character, and I'm very vested in things and very passionate in the things that I do. So I've tried to take a step backwards and see things from a different perspective, imagining what if it was not me that were in the room, and what if. I'm seeing this as a situation from a third party and from a distance. And I think that has helped me a little bit in the way I interact certain times with people and with situations.
That's a really good point. And if we go back into what you faced, and Marker, we don't know each other that well, but I think we know each other well enough that it is a bit hard for me to imagine you in a typical government situation where processes take sometimes months and nothing can go really quick, because a lot of people are always involved. It's about safety, security, it's about bureaucracy, it is about regulations. It is about a lot you have to face until you can say, so let's go. How do you get along with this type of people, but also of decision making? How do you get along with this type of leadership, which is so sometimes so different than being, for example, in a mid-range company, being the owner, co-owner, and CEO, and say, yes, we are doing it right now?
I think that government has changed a lot, and Mexican government in particular, but and it depends very much on who you're working for. I think that the leader is the one that marks the pace, even in government. And I've had the privilege of working for very high echelons of power, so decisions don't have to trickle down that much, are made in a very instant way. And I think that I had the privilege of working in the Mexican government, where you had the most high standards of people. You know, people very educated, people with huge stamina and with huge desire to change things. And sometimes that helped to put aside bureaucracy oftentimes, and and keep things going. And really what moved these people were was the huge love for Mexico and for getting things done in a country that cannot afford to be stalled by bureaucracy. Of course, there is bureaucracy. I'm not going to say that it's not there. But I think that what made people and processes move forward was the leader that was really dealing with the whole situation and seeing as a huge control tower the situation and knew that we could not afford to waste time. That has changed. That has changed. I think that the government is very much the people that are in it.
Wow, yes. That gives a lot of hope to me. I also hope that other countries can do it the same way. And I liked your sentence where you said they're working there for their country. This is great. I wish that much more people are working in the government, working for their country. One last question, Malcar, looking back on your journey, what do you think is the single most important skill for creating impact?
Oof, that is a tough question. I think that there are many skills, it's not only one, but communication definitely is one of them. I think that if you can understand different backgrounds and learn to bridge, to create bridges and communicate with different people from different outlooks and from different backgrounds, I think that that can help you navigate in complex environments and in changing environments and in environments that have nothing to do with one another. I think that communication and empathy, even if empathy is misused nowadays, I think that empathy and learning to see the perspective of the other is a very helpful skill.
Thank you.
And languages as well help.
Thank you. Thank you, Malcar, for the engaging discussion and for your inspiring insight. I look forward to our ongoing exchange and for the impact we will continue to make together the world a better place. So that wraps us our episode of We Empower for today, the weekly radio show dedicated to celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of humans around the globe. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment. Your presence and engagement mean the world to us, and we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace exciting insights, and find the motivation to love life to the fullest. Thank you for being part of our community. And unless next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise. Thank you.
My heart again. All of this time I thought we were pretending. Nothing looks the same when your eyes are open. Now you're playing these games to keep my heart.